Cliff Central.
The revolution.
I've got something important to tell you.
CliffCentral.com.
Auto Central, powered by Auto Trader on CliffCentral.com.
Right, good morning, folks. Monday morning, 9 o'clock, Auto Central. Motoring's biggest power hour brought to you by Auto Trader, your trusted motoring marketplace. In the studio with me today, T-Man, what's happening?
Hey, ta hola.
Hi, are you well?
That's how they greet each other in Alexander. Hey, ta hola. Hey, la hota. I'm good myself. How was your weekend?
Fantastic. Very, very good, actually. Busy. Crazy busy.
You're glowing. What did you do?
I had a 20-year reunion.
Wow.
Yeah. But we need a week to talk about it.
Somebody had a good time. Somebody was in a club sport.
There you go, exactly.
Somebody was in a club sport. I hate his job. Oh, I hate him.
Listen, for every good one that I get, I've got to do seven, eight mediocres, all right? Everybody just sees, hey, this is baller. This is, hey, you look like a blesser. And No, Chad,
trust me. After the elections and then you're in a club sport, you are definitely a blesser.
This is tank number three. In 4 days.
It's an
expensive month.
And the distance?
Does it matter? It's a club sport.
Yeah.
Does it matter?
Yeah.
That's Chad, if you recognize the voice, and George back in the studio with us. How's it going, George?
How's it? And that's the way you say it in the East Rand from 1610.
1610 for life, my blood.
1610 for life.
That's it.
Okay. Not far from Alexander.
Very good.
So guys, that's how you guys met, yeah, remember?
Oh.
We met in the shack. Do you remember we met in Alex? You don't even remember this? The first time I saw you all was in Alex, there by the Mikukus.
I've tried to rot it out of their memory.
No, I remember that. Okay. I remember.
Of course you would.
I remember you dancing in that school hall for the children.
You made me dance?
Just like you did just now in studio.
I didn't.
I got that video.
I got it on video.
What are you going to do that video?
I don't know. Okay. Get your permission for a few things.
Here we go. So, guys, listen.
Or not.
You know, it's good to have you here this morning. And if you want to join the conversation on Facebook and Twitter, we're at AutoTraderSA. And remember to use our hashtag AutoCentral. And then, you know, you can get the guys on their own personal Twitter profiles at Chad Lookoff.
At George Mini.
At George Mini.
At True Paw.
At True Paw. And at TDWoods01. So, gentlemen, this morning I was on my way to here. And stopped at a garage, and I've been affected by this fuel strike. All the pumps were dry. Couldn't believe it.
Yeah. Stand silence.
Yeah. And then I was like, and I didn't have a lot of petrol left in the scooter.
So did you park on the side of the road?
Well, I was ready to make that phone call to say, can you come fetch me, please? But I managed to get to another garage, and they happened to have fuel.
These guys are not budging. I mean, I heard the spokesperson says the company came with no negotiation at whatsoever.
No clause in it. No, not willing.
Like no 9%, take it or leave it, goodbye.
But there's supposed to be contingency plans, so they're not saying you're going to be turned away. You just have to go to about four garages to find fuel.
Yeah, exactly.
It's who you are, where you live, you know. I mean, you must come to my hood. There's always petrol in the
always,
hood.
Always,
Now, I suppose the ones that are really affected are those that are in the outlying areas. Those that are, you know, that are sitting there and you've got choice of maybe two filling stations at most. You're out in Kuruman or something of the sorts, and
I'm surprised you didn't say Zerust.
And you're not getting those
very much like Zerust.
Yeah, exactly. But anyway, on the positive side,
yeah,
the fuel was cheaper because petrol came down last week, huh? 99 cents.
99 cents.
Yeah.
What is that? About 8%.
But it makes no difference to the
healthy. No, you're still blowing through it at the rate of knots. That thing drinks juice like a solid rocket booster, like a Saturn V rocket.
But
depends on your foot on the fuel. That's like
it's been my foot.
Boost.
Yeah, no. I'm not
what
blaming.
What size shoe are you, Chad?
It's got nothing to do with the weight
judging,
of the shoe.
Judging by
how
the way
drives?
The weekend has been, I'm about a size 14.
Yeah, no, the way you drive, you're probably even at 20.
We'll chat about it later when we get into the cars and that. We'll touch on the three vehicles and that, what I'm currently driving and two of our reviews and that. But, I mean, it's thirsty when you drive it hard, and any car is. And this is the thing. I mean, we've sat with, and we've lamented it over and over, and so many people have, but you drive a big V8 or you drive a big 3-litre or something of the sorts. That must be so heavy on fuel. No, depends on how you drive it. If you're going to drive it like an absolute idiot or everywhere, buried in the carpet, it's going to be heavy on fuel. The rest of the time, you're idling around and it's using as much as a Prius. It's
I don't
fact.
Know. I mean, why would you
George, you've driven some big motor vehicles and own some big motor vehicles. Mm. And correct
depends,
me if I'm wrong.
Depends on your foot on that fuel.
It depends on your foot.
I guess.
Exactly. I suppose, but why would you drive a big machine nice and soft? Like, what's the point?
After you get used to it, you start driving it a bit slower.
Yeah. That's it,
you
yeah. There's a certain sense of
respect.
Peace and calm and almost ego arrogance that comes across when you know that you're in a proper performance car and you can blow away anything that pulls up alongside you. You don't have to drive it fast.
No,
anyway.
But you see the dynamics change.
Just the knowing. I mean, if I sit there and I pull up next, I'm driving club sport, and I pull up next to just a normal Golf 7 GTI, do you think I'm going to race him?
I would.
No. He knows I'm more powerful than him.
No, I'm that
I know
guy.
I'm more powerful than him. Buddy, you go. You go and blast it. I don't need to prove anything.
I will remind you. I'm that guy. I will
oh,
remind
no, no. Listen,
you
listen if it's a Golf man. R, it's a different story, hey? Oh, if it's yeah, a Golf yeah. R, because then it's game on, as did happen. It's well, who won? Tell us.
I mean, really?
You want to know? You want to get into this?
Yes, robot, yes, yes. Robot to robot, he's probably got you.
Robot to robot, the Golf R's got it. Yes. Golf R's got it. That comes out 206 kilowatts.
Yeah.
I don't have a full 206 kilowatts in the club sport. I've only got 195.
Okay.
I get 213 kilowatts, but only from third gear onwards in overboost.
Right.
Then it's pointless, Mus.
But TLGP, a traffic light Grand Prix, sat there, both of us on the launch control. The Golf R is going to do it 5 seconds, 0 to 100. Club Sport's going to do it in 5.9. It's just the all-wheel drive system.
Then keep
but
you're still slower than the SRT.
Third gear. Yeah. Third gear. That guy was pedaling. That guy was pedaling, and I started catching like this.
Yeah,
third
but
gear.
You don't want to catch up. You want to outrace the guy.
Oh, yeah, I don't know, but you want to pass him at a proper speed so that he makes him look like he's looking for parking.
Did you hear what George just said? What
yeah, it's not the SRT8.
Still slower than the SRT8. Yeah.
My he says with a big grin on his face.
We digress. Listen, do you know that we've got the 45th most affordable petrol in the world?
Yeah, that's flipping a
yeah,
fact.
Yeah, that's good. See, this is a good country to stay in, man.
But the problem is...
Ah, and then he says, but...
We spend more of our income on fuel because of the distances we drive... And we also don't have a proper public transport system.
But the reason for this petrol price decrease was largely because of the strengthening of the rand.
Yes.
And the weakening of the dollar.
Yes.
So it's still a volatile thing in the country.
No, for sure.
Because you never know when some idiot's going to do something that's going to cause the petrol price to increase.
Yeah. Like jiggle a cabinet somewhere.
Do you know what they pay for petrol in Kuwait?
What?
R3.55 a litre.
3 rand, like I must say it in the township. 3 rand.
3
like
rand.
1, 2, 3 rand.
Yeah.
For sure.
But we'll get there someday. Let's just be hopeful.
That's when you don't have to do a short left.
Exactly. You just drive forever. You thought that was funny, huh?
No, it is actually heartbreaking. 3 rand.
350, yeah.
Yeah, no.
Anyway, look, we're not... It could be worse. Let's put it that way. It really could be worse. I wanted to ask you guys, when you, like, you know, you obviously we go to garages and stuff like that, and, you know, Gareth and them obviously saw our lineup today and they've touched on it a little bit, but I really want to get your input on this. Is tipping protocol, car guards, petrol attendants, etc., is there protocol when it comes to this?
This is just my personal opinion. In order to get paid for anything, you've got to add value.
Yes.
100%.
If there's no value added, there's no payment. So for me, if the person adds more value than what you would have ordinarily got,
absolutely,
at that moment in time, then
really
absolutely.
Talking smile attitude, nudge, it's
now that should be standard.
Yeah.
Taking the parent's approach, I'm not going to reward somebody for
nothing,
doing his job
for doing it and doing it, you know, with a foul attitude or just a complacent will-do attitude. No, if you come in there and you show me something above and beyond, by all means, then reward it.
Exactly. I think good attitude. Good attitude is standard. You can't. I mean, for me,
it should be par.
It should be par. You know, good attitude. Do your job to the best of your ability. Great stuff. Anything over and above that, then that's just my
personal
opinion.
Is that petrol attendants or is that
anyone
as well?
Just about anybody, anywhere.
Waitresses, waiters,
especially
petrol attendants.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter.
Service providers as a whole.
But I think
I've got no problem rewarding, not extraordinary, but just the effort to go a little above and beyond.
An extra mile.
Yeah,
extra mile.
That little bit extra.
So, if you get shit service in a restaurant, won't you tip?
No.
It affects the level of
naturally. Because they say there's a minimum of 10%.
So it affects the level. And generally I'll sit there 10%. If they've been particularly bad, I'm going to punish them in the same way. Okay. I'm not going to sit there and give them a one rant.
Because then you're teaching them in the
same way. But I'm going to say, listen, if you're not earning money, then you maybe need to reevaluate the way that you do things.
Yeah.
Because if you were completely missing, I had to sit here and wait, you know, half an hour for you to take a drinks order, but then only 5 minutes for you to bring the bill, there's something wrong.
Yeah.
You're chasing money.
100%.
And terribly sorry that I'm not going to reward you for that.
Yeah. I have an issue with car guards, especially in shopping centres where there's paid security guards
yeah,
as well.
Yeah, no. That's
and then it's like, you know, and you go in.
What, you don't want to pay them?
Generally, I don't. Huh?
Well, I mean, what is your expectation of service in a paid parking garage? You expect security in a paid parking garage because you're paying to get in.
And in a non-paid one?
In a non-paid one, I think the car guards have a place. But when they're well managed.
Yeah, and if I've been there.
Well-mannered.
And well-mannered, yes.
Yeah. I think some of the guys, I don't know, I just generally don't because that's just the rule that I've made. Mm. But then you get other car guards. When we were living at the coast, where you'd go for a surf and you leave your car, you park your car, and then you sit with this problem of electric car keys. What do you do with your car keys when you go for a surf? You can't take them into the water with you.
Do you give them to the car guard?
You give them to the car guard.
You are joking.
Yeah, seriously, I'm not even joking. You
so
go down to
he
North
actually
Beach,
becomes a valet and not a car guard.
100%, and he's got this big piece of wire, and I promise you now, he must carry 30-40 car keys on that.
Wow.
And they're all over. And they are.
Do you realize that if some car scammers hear about that, they'll go for the car guards and get the keys?
That's the difference, though. The car guards, you actually phone them before you go down for a surf. They tell you what the waves are looking like. Then you get down there.
Now, that's a proper adding value.
Hey, 100%. Yeah. You know, so you can actually make the phone call before anything else.
Sure.
Oh, here
that's
we go.
That's incredible.
Cindy Mundell. Oh my word, I live in Ireland and miss petrol attendants. I had to learn how to put fuel in and I'm still pretty useless with all the other things that attendants do. Tip them and keep the industry going for as long as possible. Cindy, thanks very much.
That's a good point, Cindy, because you know what? We're probably one of the few countries that still
have
petrol attendants.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, you know.
That said, I've got no problem doing it myself.
But we're not allowed to, am I right?
I lived in the States. I do it sometimes. Yeah, anyway, when he's absolutely lax or whatever, and he's not sitting there and attending it, and I've got somewhere to go, but I'm grabbing that nozzle and I'm pulling it out.
But don't
I'm
they have those little magnetic chips that you have to, you know?
Yeah, but as soon as he started it, I can take over, buddy. I just need you for that chip.
Flammable liquid? I don't know.
The smell of petrol on my fingers, no near, donkey.
No, you don't. I mean, you sit there in the States, they do it, and you're not sitting with petrol on your hands. And that if you're working with it the whole day, yes.
Mm.
You know, if you're sitting there, you're actually working as an attendant. But no, if you're filling up your car, really not the end of the world. I mean, the American stations, you park it, you run inside if you want to pay with it cash, and you say, listen, pump number three, just give me, you know, $10, $15, however much.
Yeah.
Go back out, they've loaded it up, you go to 15, it stops, cool. Or you fill it up and you go in and you pay afterwards. There's such a sense of trust that goes in there. And if you're not doing that, you just swipe your card fill up, swipe.
And how do they police that? I mean, I'm surely some guys take a chance.
No, they don't. It's not Africa. There's honesty.
You've mentioned something very important. Trust. We're not there yet.
Yeah, no.
And we still have to create jobs. People must do this for us. So
I like the fact that it is job creation and that, yes, it does make you feel a little bit special, and especially foreigners when they come here. You've got people that actually do this. This is like, wow, this is like a full star service. No, this is just the way it is. And it's job creation. And yes, it's having somebody that, you know, looks after your car, and that's his job. That's what he does.
Right.
You know, they sit in there and they're washing windscreens and they're checking oils and
the same
tires. And
the same petrol attendants, the poor guys, if you shortchange them, they take it off their salaries.
Yeah, I don't know. They do, yeah.
Shame, man.
Oh, serious?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, if you pull in with your SRT and Khoi Fu, then can you drive off? And he's paying for it.
Wow.
No, but that's good, because then I am only, when I ask him for, hey, $400 or something of the sorts, and he puts in that 415 cents. And he said to me, don't you have a 20 or something? Buddy, nope, terribly sorry. I asked
you
for 400, not 450.
Yeah.
Okay. So,
you say that. Last week,
learn control.
Obviously, in the area that we stay in, there's a community forum kind of WhatsApp group. And the garage put out a notification to say someone had gone, filled up their tank,
no, you're kidding,
and drove off.
Yeah.
Obviously, put the guy's car and his registration out on that as well. I mean,
there was one there by me as well, and the guy with a big car, a Toyota Fortuna. And he'd filled it up.
That's why there was no petrol in my area today. He car.
Gee whiz.
And drove off.
And he drove off.
How do you sleep at night? Like, how do you sleep at night?
Apparently his eyes closed, but...
Yo, some folks just don't give a shit. Yeah, they really don't.
This is why we can't have nice things.
Yeah.
You know, this is why there's no trust. It's because things like this happen. And, you know, it's not necessarily culturally or pay grades or anything. Just as a whole, everybody's just that's a little bit disrespectful.
Do you think they should kind of standardize it and make these, like you should, like parking attendants, which is gonna, which we're going to get onto just now in like the city center, where those guys are actually paid a salary to perform a job. Should it be regulated? Like, I mean, car guards, should they have to apply for jobs? Like petrol attendants apply for jobs with garages?
You see, I would argue yes. And the reason I would argue yes is because you just don't know who is the good guy and who is the bad guy.
Yeah.
And in that scenario, it should be regulated. Because, you know, I've seen some people who act as if they're car guards, and you know, if you just watch what they're doing, they're not there for the right reasons.
Well, especially when you go to like a sporting, you know, if there's rugby at Ellis Park or any car, I suppose a motoring event, anything.
Those ones are
all of a sudden, everyone's got a bloody yellow bib, and they're like, and they $50 here, $100 rand.
They're there when you pull in, but as soon as you come out, they know where to be seen.
But that's why they want the money up front.
Exactly. But I see now, if that's the case, I will pay you when I get back, and if my car's in good order, and I'll negotiate the price that I'm going to pay you. Before I go into
that's
the
exactly
event.
What I do. That's exactly what I do.
But I mean, even if they're there, when your car's about to be stolen, they can only distract the guys. But there's not much they can do.
There's not much
they
can do. No, they're not armed, and it's really not. It's
and they can't be armed. I mean, they're not.
They're a deterrent, and I mean, there's still so many reported cases of, despite the fact that the car guard was there, the car was still stolen or broken into or whatever. You know, it's.
But we actually went downtown and spoke to one of the guys there. He's a supervisor. They actually do quite a lot. They print, you know, they scan the your number plate and they print you.
Yes.
One of these things.
They do that in Cape Town, eh?
City
Centre. Yeah.
They walk around with these machines, which I think is brilliant. I think that's a good system.
Yeah. So it's about what, 10 rand 50 an hour.
Has it gone up?
Yeah, and it's gone every 1 July it goes up. So next year it'll be 11 rand.
Okay.
Yeah.
So and you know they base that price on global kind of parking rates
and fees.
Yeah.
So I mean it's 10.50 an hour, you get a receipt. It's not only Joburg, but they get commission, eh?
Yes.
About 20% commission that they make. So they I mean, and
it's that's a good system.
Yeah, it's not entirely. They employ about 300 people, you know.
And it regulates parking, because a big issue was in the CBD is that guys would go there, park their cars for, you know, two days. And I think it has to be regulated, and I think it generates income for the city. I've got no issues with going to Joburg and paying for parking on the side of the road. Absolutely zero.
And they've got prepaid cards as well, hey? Where you get a 1 rand discount. So.
But in all these scenarios, those are effectively taxes. That means, shouldn't taxes come down? If we have to pay for parking, if we have to tip attendance, if we...
Yeah, you make a very, very good point there.
So all of these are effectively what the city should be providing anyway. And in those scenarios, it's effectively a tax.
You pay tax when you buy your tires, fuel, license, disc.
Well, so general income tax should come down.
Well, let's see if they change it in Pretoria now. Let's put it that way.
I knew it was going to come. I was waiting for it. I didn't want to say it.
A friend of mine says to me, hey, Tepo, how are you? I'm like, hey, Tepo. No, we speak Afrikaans now. I'm like, why? He says, we are Chwani, bro. We are Chwani. I'm like, yes, I forgot.
Chwani?
Yeah, that's what he said.
No, application's already been put in to change it back to Pretoria.
Pretoria, not
yeah.
Pretoria.
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 Yeah. No, 1610 in Pretoria.
No. Everything's cool on that side of the what is that? We're all this side of the river anyway.
Yeah.
1610. Do you know where that is?
1610. You boys.
Huh?
You boys, I must come find it by 16. That's a postal code, 1610,
isn't it? Yeah, Edenvale.
Yep.
I'm worse. I'm the 1559. I'm so far east, I'm almost Asian.
That sounds cool, the 1559.
The 1559.
1610
yeah.
is a skeleton.
Springs.
Is that it? That's far east, huh?
Yeah, like I say, if I was any further east, I'd be Asian.
Jesus, that's ridiculous. That's crazy.
You pack pot course.
I suppose you have to.
Not when you drive a GTR Club Sport.
No.
Nah, 20 minutes flat.
And a big bag of money in the boot for the petrol.
Will GTRs ever come in diesel?
No, you get a GTD, which overseas is basically, I want to say it's a performance orientated diesel and that, but nah, not really. I don't think so. Hey?
No.
Diesel isn't inherently performance orientated. It's, you know, it'll make good torque, it'll be fuel efficient for the most part. It can make power, but it's just
not the kind of power that petrol.
If you need to make power out of a diesel, it becomes very
costly.
Yeah, it becomes costly, but it's not very good to the environment. So the emissions take a knock as soon as you try and extract performance out of a diesel. You need to bump the fuel pressure and everything, and you just end up, there's so much unburnt that the CO2s from it is just really not viable.
While on these abbreviations, here's another stupid question. And I'll tell you why I ask these stupid questions. Mm-hmm. As I'd like to get to a point
where... No such thing as a stupid question.
I know. They say be a fool once. I think at some point we need to start thinking of creating a car in this country. I mean, if we can cook. Anyway, the question was...
Mm-hmm. Didn't we try? We tried.
Did,
yeah, we've tried.
Plenty.
But there's no reason why we can't do it again. You know, I mean...
I was talking to my dad on the weekend, and he reminded me that we did try and make a car.
What was it? A Valiant?
I don't remember.
The Puma.
Was it the Puma?
Puma was a locally produced one. At the moment, we've currently got the Barnard. High performance, you know, typical Austrian, German, British sort of performance car built in a shed somewhere, uses parts from other cars and engines from other cars.
Because we've got what it takes, Jet, don't you think?
Yeah, we do. We definitely do. I mean, if you take a look at what the guys are doing, and we've seen there was a whole bunch of them now recently in the news with their own creation, almost what they're calling like the township crafters.
Mm-hmm.
And they're sitting there and they're taking just a bare chassis and they're crafting their own cars around it, and they're using the wheels from this and the steering from that, and 9 times out of 10 the engine from a BMW or something of the sorts, and they're making their own cars with sound systems and all that sort of stuff, and they're getting good publicity. We've got very ingenious craftsmen, yeah, artisans in the country. Yeah. Why? Because necessity is the mother of all invention.
Yeah. But now, how are they roadworthy, those?
You get a once-off license. In the same way that if you happen to build, let's say, a Lotus 7 replica or a Cobra replica or something of the sort,
okay,
once-off licensing, as long as it passes the roadworthy,
then you can,
as stipulated, some of them aren't going to, but, you know, it needs to have lights, they need to be a certain height, brakes, need to be able to see, et cetera, et cetera. You know, it can. You can get a once-off basic license and registration for it.
It was the Austin Apache, designed and manufactured in South Africa in 1971 to 1978, and was specifically designed in South Africa, used by British Leyland Motor Corporation, a South African subsidiary. But it didn't succeed.
Didn't take off.
Yeah.
And if you do a search there for the Puma car as well.
Well, just while you're doing that, because we build a lot of vehicles.
Assemble
and manufacture. Huh?
And manufacture.
Yeah, but it's
under license, huh?
It's under license. It's not of our own dies and jigs. We didn't design it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but if we can assemble it and it passes here, we might as well just make our own kind of. But
it's the design that's tricky, I think.
It is. It's very
the design that's the conundrum. You know, actually coming up with that concept and then making the machines to manufacture the parts.
Yeah, it's easy to draw a picture and say that's what it's going to look like. But, you know, to actually make that happen, I think, is difficult.
You know, I mean, talking about licensing and passing and roadworthiness, this morning I saw a white SS Lumina on Albertina Sisulu Drive in Roodepoort. That car's chassis. I mean, that car is actually driving forwards, but it's looking the other way. And the guy had a safety belt in, and it looked very nice and clean with nice mags. But I don't know whether he was driving to the panel beta or... But, I mean, the rear wheels are halfway into the next lane.
Is it just because it's so wide?
No.
You sure you weren't in the...
I think it was in a car accident. And, I hit my head. I'm like, what's going on? What am I seeing?
Think crab crawling like
it. Actually, it was like a crab. And then when I hop onto the N1 highway... He has a Opel Corsa Bucky with a, I don't know if it's curtain rails or whatever, but they're protruding onto the side. Like a good meter outside of the car with no red cloth.
They should have that red. What is the protrusions out of the car?
Yeah, you need a red flag. Huh?
Yeah,
a
red flag on it.
Just, if it protrudes anything more than, I think, 60.
60 centimeters.
He's way above the meter,
I think, so,
to the side, like sideways. And so when he drives on the highway, he moves closer to the... To the edge, to his left side.
Yeah.
Just so he leaves enough space. But still, it overlaps into the next lane.
In all theory, if it's actually wider than the vehicle is like that, then he needs the abnormal in front of him. He actually needs an abnormal.
And it's a branded security car. So you can see it's just a little private courier, you know, that he's doing.
Hey, report that stuff, man. You report that stuff.
I took a picture of him. I must actually upload it.
Yeah, you must show us, because surely you shouldn't be allowed on our
road. No, you shouldn't be allowed on the road.
Well, listen, guys, we're gonna go to a break. And when we come back, we've got some very, very cool... motoring, we're talking double cab shootout, and we're talking Jaguar XF.
Ooh,
XF.
XF. Yeah,
XF.
Sorry, I made a typo. Sorry.
Yeah, XF. XF.
XJ
is the
XJ is the
last number.
Yeah,
that's last number.
Last number.
But now
this one's sort of like in the middle there somewhere.
As we started last week, what's the name of the car? What's the road? You told me what the song is. I was actually shocked.
You were shocked. Let me tell you. Okay. It's from the movie Pretty Woman, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
Ne?
Yeah.
I saw the movie. I was a virgin. I saw the movie a long time ago, and that song stuck with me. And I would like to be in. Do you want to know what car it would be?
Yeah.
It's a Ford Galaxy. You know that long, long the car is. The old car. And then with a long seat that take five people in the front seat.
The bench.
But it must be, you know, the orange, you know, the Ford Focus Super Turbo orange kind of color? It must be that color. And it must be on a Sunday mid morning on the N14 with my kids and wife and
Hoy. Lovely. And you're going to put this song on.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
Absolutely fantastic. Guys, we'll get back to you after the break.
CliffCentral.com.
Whatever your term of endearment for your prize ride,
4-banger, 4-by, barge, beamer, beater, Benz, big rig, bike, freezer, chori, chopper, clunker, crotch rocket, denka, ghetto cruiser, hog, hobdy, hypermiler, jalopy, junker, kombi, lambo, land barge, pimpmobile, pocket rocket, bottle jumper, render rock scoot, shagging wagon, shitbox, sled, tank, warrant wagon, whoopee!
There's only one place to visit if you're looking to buy a new vehicle. Autotrader.co.za. With simple navigation and over 62,000 cars to choose from, it's a no-brainer. Visit autotrader.co.za today and find your next set of wheels.
You AutoCentral.com.
Car news and reviews on AutoCentral.
Right, we're back and we're talking cars with Chad. Chad, you guys had the Ford Ranger and the Toyota Hilux.
Yeah, we did a little bit of a double cab shootout.
Yeah, tell us all about it, man.
The two models that we had weren't exactly neck and neck competitors in terms of engine displacement and that. We had the 2.2 4x4 double cab XLS in the Ford Ranger. So that's 2.2 litre. Yeah. But then we had the almost top of the range 2.8 GD6 double cab 4x4 auto from the Hilux. So it's a slightly higher spec, it's a slightly more powerful motor and that. But we just wanted to compare them because the basics don't change. You know, what the vehicle is, the basics in terms of majority of the suspension, drivetrain and that, it's not going to change that much. You're going to have slightly different power, slightly different power delivery. But for the most part, what they're offering is pretty much what they're offering.
Yeah.
And we just took a little bit of a shootout. It was Lawrence and myself and that. And he pretty much sided with the Ranger. So he had the Ranger. Mm. I spent time in the Hilux. So I can give you a slightly more biased opinion from the Hilux's point. I've driven, I've driven wild tracks and I've driven the Ranger in multiple sort of, in 2.2 and 3.2. And the Hilux, I'll tell you what, is quite a revelation. It really is. It's come a long way. It's a fantastic leap over the outgoing model, the previous generation, and compared to what we know and expect from a double cab or a one-tonner bucky, and we're South African, we call it bucky.
It's a buck truck, man.
Yeah, it's a buck truck. Yeah, it's considerably more advanced. So it drives more car-like.
Yeah.
Its interior is trimmed more like a car. And I mean, yes, I am one and as well known that I do place a lot of emphasis on the interior of a vehicle, but that's where you spend time, you know, and that's true. You don't drive the car from the outside, you drive it from the inside.
Life's about experience. You got to.
That's
you
it. Yeah. You know, so on the inside, really, really like the way that it has been trimmed and finished. Really fantastic value for money, and it really hasn't been bumped up that high in terms of price.
Okay.
The price has escalated a little bit since it released in, I think it was February or March this year that it released, but still decent value for money. Out of the two, you know, we sort of came to the conclusion that to live with, the Hilux is fantastic to live with. The Ranger's also not bad to live with. They both got very good manners. I was really, really blown away by the road manners of the Hilux on the road.
Okay.
The Hilux does seem a little too pretty, prim and proper.
Yeah.
Almost to sort of take off road. And that's where if you're sitting there and you need to do the dirt road sort of thing and you're weighing up Hilux versus Ranger, you know, if you're doing the rough and tumble stuff,
the
Ranger's got a slightly more beefy edge to it.
Yeah.
The Hilux is a little almost too polished.
Yeah.
Now when we did the same sort of double cab shootout between the Isuzu KB and the Ranger, we said the same thing, but this time we said we're gonna take the Isuzu KB off road rather than the Ranger. The Ranger's just the prettier one of the two. It's not as rough and tumble. Yeah. So we've said pretty much the same thing, but this time reverse the roles with the Ranger and the Hilux. Yeah. So just to give you an idea, the Hilux comes in, that 2.8-litre GD6 diesel motor, 130 kilowatts, 415 newtons. So very good power, very good power delivery. Beautifully refined motor. They've really done wonders there. Fuel consumption figures on average about 10.2 per 100, you know, which is a little heavy. Because you go with the 2.2 Ranger, and that one's going to make 118 kilowatts. So it's about 12 kilowatts down there, 385 newtons. So you're sitting with, what's that, 65-odd newtons less. But then it returns 8.3 liters per 100, which, you know, is quite a saving there.
Especially in this day and age. I'd rather have
When it comes to this sort of power, you know, that's really not, unless you really are towing and you need maximum towing capacity, that little bit of difference between the two of them is almost negligible.
Yeah.
Price-wise, the Ford Ranger is going to come in about 518,000 Rand before specking. Toyota Hilux, 570. Like I said, they're not exactly direct competitors, but it gives you an idea of what you're getting for, you know, that extra.
And both very, very capable off-road. I mean, are these weekend warrior kind of vehicles?
Absolutely,
your canoes, mountain bikers, that kind of...
If not more so. These will be able to tackle a 4x4 track and a 4x4 course. You know, they're sitting there and they've got your high range and your low ranges.
Yeah.
They've got diff locks and the likes in it. So, yes, very capable off-road. Neither of them you can really sort of knock and say, listen, they're not going to manage off-road.
Sure.
The Ranger is known to crash a little bit and feel a little stiffly sprung for... off-road stuff, you know, so it tends to bang into bumps and that sort of stuff. Where the rest, others tend to soak it up a little more.
Yeah.
But we didn't really flex it. We wanted to find out, because 80% of the people that are going to buy these are going to live with them on road.
Yes.
You know, so so how is it going to feel on road? Because he's just going to take it every now and then. He's going to take it to the plot, or he's going to take it to the dam or something of the sort. He's not living on a dirt road.
So this is kind of Monday to Friday, my
Monday
work.
Monday to Friday. You know, why is he buying a double cab? Because he's got family.
Yeah.
He's got family. He's squatting people.
Yeah.
You know? So, because it's certainly in helping in the tax.
They are very, very versatile vehicles.
They are. They are fantastic. And as the interiors and the drive start improving like this to the level of the Hilux, I can all of a sudden start wanting one. I dug my heels in. I said, no, it's a double cab. The thing doesn't handle. It's noisy. It's agricultural. It's unrefined.
Agricultural.
I do not need a vehicle like that in my life.
Mm.
And now I'm sitting there and I'm saying, things have changed. Yeah. And I've got to have that open mind and say, I could quite comfortably drop my money on a double cab, because the practicality is quite good and the drive is now on par with that of some of the vehicles.
I think from a looks point of view, I obviously saw you guys having they were parked next to each other. I just don't like the nose of the
of the Hilux.
It's got an overbite.
The new one is better.
Overbite? You mean an or is it overbite or underbite?
No, it's overbite.
That's a real overbite. It's
the Ranger looks much more.
Yeah, I like that square front, but that's proper. They've gone back Ford old school.
Well, what they've actually done here, I mean, the Ranger's now facelift, so they've gone from the large square lights, they've thinned out the lights a little bit, so it's a slightly more narrow headlight. It gives it a slightly more sedan approach, and I actually think I prefer the look of the one before it. And then you get the wheels, and they've just done nothing exciting with the wheels.
Too many times in
but it's a midlife cycle facelift.
It's starting to look like the American Ford.
American truck,
The F-100.
You see what they're doing is Ford's going with a global one sort of approach, where instead of having a British Ford and American Ford with two different sort of model fleets being created in either sector there, they're going with one general one. I mean, things like the Focus were made in Germany, you know? Yeah, Ford Germany.
Wow.
There's a Ford Germany, and they... Yeah, exactly. But now they're
probably
going with a central
precise
one, so that you're going to be able to buy things like Ranger, Focus, and that's why we're getting Mustang in that now, is because of this global one, is you're now getting all Ford models are available in basically all areas.
Yeah.
My thing, though, is the loading bin with all these new double cabs. When you load your quad bike in there, you can't close the tailgate.
Well, you can get a cage.
Don't be cheap. Just buy a trailer.
No, that's why you're buying the... Then what?
500,000 rand, you call that cheap. This beautiful thing must be able to do...
If you can afford a 500,000 rand car, you can buy a 15 grand trailer.
Well, I mean, in America, those loading bins are huge.
But their vehicles are considerably large.
Probably two quad bikes.
Remember, you're not going to get a little Bantam in the States. This is pretty much the smallest you're going to get is a Ranger.
Yeah.
They only get bigger from here, like the real Raptors. Because what we get here is not a Raptor.
Oh, is it just like...
No. It's a sticker pack, what we get here. Trust me. A proper Raptor...
Pack.
Yeah, no, it is. It's Spruchenblock.
You get your car, and you get your sticker pack,
and you can design it yourself.
No, you come 1631. What are you? 1559.
Yeah, I'm the 1559. Yeah, was 1559.
Talking about sticker packs, do Jaguar have those when they sell a car?
No.
No.
No, that's not a real car.
No, real car. Tell us about that. Tell us about that XF.
Well, also reviewed the XF, and the XF is the one that's now competing with the mid-size saloons. So we're taking a look. It goes up against the likes of BMW's 5 Series, Audi A6, Mercedes-Benz E-Class. So it's sitting keeping company with those guys there. The XF, I had it in the 20D Prestige. So that's it's your entry point into mid-size saloon Jaguar ownership. It's going to come in at 765,000 rand. Okay, it's going to start around there, which does make it a little expensive, but it's fairly decently spec'd to start with, which is something that I will always, well, until they change it, I'll always criticize the Germans for, because, you know, you take a look there, the only one that's really actually knocking on that door is the Mercedes-Benz E220 diesel.
Okay.
That comes in at 760, you know, so that's knocking on, there's like $5,000 difference, but that's before you've spec'd anything on the Merc. And as soon as you start spec'ing it, you know you can drop another 100K on it quite comfortably. The Audi A6, no 2-litre TDI option there, only a 3-litre TDI, but even then, that still comes in base price, 733, so 30K cheaper. But once again, Audi, you want to spec it. We know that they have 100,000 Rand paint options and 170,000 Rand seating options.
They never used to be like that, eh?
No, they never.
Audi used to come all bells and whistles.
Fact.
Never used to be like that. And now they're following in Merck and BMW's footsteps.
Yeah.
But this this XF, it looks really nice.
It's a nice looking vehicle.
I've never really liked a Jag before, but this one looks really nice. Looks like the Lexus a little bit.
Yes. Slightly, but you know what it looks
Aston
a little
Martin
more like? Yeah, you know what it looks a little more like? It's like its baby brother, the XE, which isn't a bad looking vehicle. Even if it is a little copy paste in places, it's got the XE design architecture, and that's a good thing. Sadly, the interior was a little bit of a letdown. Usually the British cars are, you know, very, very good with the interior, and this one just seemed a little dated, and especially in terms of the build quality, and that when you compare it to the company that it's keeping, the likes of Mercedes-Benz E-Class, BMW 5 Series, Audi A6, you know, they're trimming things, you know, really properly. And so it was a little shy there, and that, as a whole, makes the car, for me, a little expensive. Fortunately, we only get the high-powered version here. The high-powered version here in South Africa is going to make 132 kilowatts and 430 newton meters.
132 kilowatts high-powered?
Yeah, from 2-liter diesel.
Wow. What is that? 430
newtons.
What is that GTI push out?
Oh, no, the GTR is sitting on 195 kilowatts.
My point.
Yeah.
This is a diesel. That's, I mean, 132 kilowatts. You get it. There's 120 kilowatt diesel that's available overseas. They've got a high power and a low power, but we haven't gotten the low power diesel.
Oh, so it's high power in relation to the other car.
In relation to the other car, yes. Yeah. No, it's not high power in relation to everything else in the world. No, it's quite low.
Yeah.
Listen to us here, 132 kilowatts. That was a performance Golf 4.
Yeah,
the GTI R, that was 132 kilowatts.
I mean, my old Golf 5 GTI is on 147.
Exactly, yeah. So 132 wasn't far off of that. Yeah. So, but 5.2 litres per 100.
That's very good.
Which is pretty decent. And the motor's actually.
But that's because it's diesel, right?
Yeah, because it's diesel, yeah. So, yeah. I mean, it's your entry into midsize Jaguar ownership in the XF. Personally, I think I'd rather spend the money on the XE, which was a slightly more rewarding drive for me. But not a bad vehicle there. Well, our video is out. You can go and take a look at it. We go through it heads and tails with a little bit of a surprise in the ending that you can go and take a look at.
Oh, fantastic. That sounds
exciting. That's on the autotrader.co.za YouTube channel, Autotrader South Africa.
Fantastic. Tell me, the brand of the heritage of the Jaguar brand, is it still what it was 10, 15 years ago? These cars were like stately for, you know, old white males, kind of like, you know, I've made it in life and now I drive a Jag.
I have to tell you a story about a Jag,
yes and no. You know, they went through a troublesome patch where they were owned by Ford, and that was the time when, sadly, I bought one.
Wrong time.
Yes. Yeah, very wrong time. And they're trying to really now recapture the old essence, but they know that they can't go back to the old sort of...
Yes.
Almost colonial. The Daimler sort of approach to things. Was it the Daimler? The Sovereign sort of days, you know, the old XJs and the likes. They really need to stay up to date because otherwise they're just going to be left. They can't keep on pitching it to the people that were 40 years old, 40 to 50 years old when they were, you know, at their prime type thing or strong in, let's say, late 80s, early 90s and that.
Yeah.
Those people are now 60, 70, they're retired, they don't necessarily have the money to go and purchase a vehicle of that nature. They need to start pitching it to a younger market, and that's why we're getting this newer design architecture in the XE, XF.
It's kind of what Harley Davidson had to do.
Absolutely, yeah. No, you can't keep on pitching it to the same clientele.
Reinvent themselves.
Yeah, that worked.
Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah.
Because otherwise you're just going to... You know, fall off the wagon eventually.
You become irrelevant.
Yeah, exactly.
Jaguar should start a tattoo club.
Can you imagine?
Like Harley did. Harley Davidson did it. Dinkum.
But I mean, the lifestyle goes with them.
Exactly. I'm trying to tie in the tattoo Jaguar. Unless you're going to get a tiger peeking out of your rectum or something.
I've broken the Jaguar rules. I mean, there's a guy who's a site manager at a construction site in Krugersdorp. He comes every day on the construction site in a Jaguar.
Why?
I look at that. That was...
Because statement.
You should ask him.
Maybe that's the only car.
Yeah.
Like,
you know,
Jaguar.
You know what happened? I know this. He bought it and now he's married to it. He didn't realize that there was a wedding ring in the glove box. He can't sell that thing. He can't get rid of it now. That's why he's bringing it to
sale. Oh, is that what it is?
He's hoping for a front-end loader or something to drive over it. Just claim from our workman's comp.
South Africans are notoriously into their cars. I've seen people drive more expensive cars than houses they live in.
Well, we spend so much time in them.
Really?
So, you know, you just go to any, you know, SummerCon kind of establishment, and you'll see the fancy, you know, the Range Rovers outside there, but the apartments.
500,000 rand apartment with a 1.2 million rand car.
Exactly. Now there's a dude who there's a like your township hangout spot in Kagis. Now you find your Golf Ones, your Polos, your Tezes, your utility buckies, and then boom, an X6. Like this car does not belong here.
Yeah, it just doesn't work, does it?
No, this car does not belong here. So I don't know. Maybe we must ask questions on why you buy what you buy.
I think why do you drive a Jaguar onto a construction site?
Yeah, like when you buy, like the lady just walked out now before the on Gareth's show. She wants to buy a car, but like, what are the questions? Well, when, why, what, how? What must you consider when you buy a car?
Good question. You know what the thing is? People need to be honest with themselves.
Yeah.
And most of the time, they're not. They buy out of want and desire, not out of affordability. And I started having this conversation yesterday as well. When you take a look at what this is going, like something like a club sport is going to cost you, you know, you're looking at about between 8,000 and 10,000 rand before you've insured it. Mm. So what are you earning? You're taking home. You're supposed to be taking home now 30K in order to be able to afford this, which is more than 30% of your paycheck. That's before you've insured it, which is going to be over 2K for a performance vehicle like this. Where's your rent, your food, your cell phone, your connectivity, etc., your fuel and all that sort of stuff?
And what does it do for you for
these
all
these oaks are living in student dig somewhere, and he's earning 12,000 rand a month. He's managed to juke it. He's managed to get somebody to sign surety, but because it's GTI.
Look, you can sleep in your car, but you can't drive your house.
My man, I'm going to high five you there because that is my mentor.
You can sleep in your car, but you can't drive your house. That's the reason.
Exactly. Chaps, on that note, Chad, thanks very much. Guys, go and check out the video, as Chad said, on autotrader.co.za. And when we're back, we're talking tech with George.
Talking tech on Auto Central.
And we're back. There was a quick one, no ad break there. I think we got quite a bit to go through. This is a topic that, to be completely honest, scares the crap out of me. We'll get into that point. But... George, yeah, I think if you can pack, we're talking in-vehicle infotainment to dominate M2M data traffic. And what is M2M?
Well, I mean, M2M is, in short, machine-to-machine. Machine-to-machine. That's the, what do you call it, the description of the acronym.
Yeah. You could also M2M. Call it Skynet if you want.
Skynet, yeah. So, I mean, the official description is machine-to-machine is a broad label that can be used to describe any technology that enables network devices to exchange information and perform actions without the manual assistance of humans. So, machine-to-machine. And
robotics.
It's going to form the basis for our autonomously driving cars in the future, machine-to-machine technology.
Because these cars are obviously going to now communicate to each other.
Yeah. Well, I mean, in the car of the future, there's going to be a couple of things. It's going to be what's called car-to-car. Cars talk. Cars communicating with each other. Consumer device integration. So your car talking to your device, and then car to cloud. So a car uploading data into the cloud.
That's going to drive over 3 billion hours of now. Would it be streaming
data. Yes.
Data,
so you can imagine the amount of data that is going to be. Leaving that car and entering the car.
We really are going to become an always connected society.
No, but it's a problem, these things. When you want to keep discrete information from the one person, and your car can collect all this information, tell whoever that you are with. No, it's a problem, this thing.
But that's a good point, because Jeep was hacked.
Yes.
On purpose.
Yeah,
on Jeep purpose. Was hacked.
Yes.
A little while ago, where they did a controlled study of on Jeep and proved that they could hack the Jeep. They made the windscreen wipers go, they put the headlights on, they made the car physically stop, proving that the car could be hacked. Now, isn't that an argument to say that the security of this technology needs to reside in Apple CarPlay and Android Auto, rather than the car manufacturers coming up with the technologies? Because stick to what you're good at,
and you build the car because that's what you're very good at. And like we spoke earlier on, I mean, that's a mechanical kind of product, and let the tech guys do the tech they had to recall how many thousands of vehicles? I think it was over 1,200
you see already.
Cars had to come back.
1.4 million cars and trucks in the US market were recalled because of this Jeep test. because they were able to hack into the software of the Jeep. Now Toyota, almost said Toyota Corolla. Toyota has rejected CarPlay and Android Auto for now. They say they might go there in the future,
but not yet.
But not yet, because they want to build their own software platforms.
I think that's crazy.
And then they can though.
But they, but this is what we spoke about. Mm-hmm. Why would they want to do that? They're not a technology-based business. They build cars.
Stick to what you're good at.
Stick to what you're good at.
Finish and low.
But then, you know, we say that, and last week we spoke about Apple building a vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where do you draw the line? Mm-hmm. Because we all know that, you know, Apple have produced some really cool products. Some of us don't think so. But but that's what they do. Yeah. And, you know, I can understand a tech company becoming a motor vehicle manufacturer
when it's not a combustion driven motor vehicle anymore, when it's
largely
a technology device, yeah. It's something you can, so you know,
I'm going to argue it. Leave it to those that have been building cars for over 100 years.
What, the software?
No, not the software, the vehicle itself. When it comes to building the vehicle itself in terms of suspension, geometry, dynamics, comfort,
but we're saying the same thing,
Dave, you know, let the people like Toyota build that. And then when it comes to the tech, let the people who specialize in that build that. You know,
I agree with that 100%. Let the car companies build the car.
Yeah. Yes.
And let the software companies build the technology.
Yeah. Exactly.
So Toyota's rejected CarPlay and Android Auto, which means that the likes of Ford and BMW and Mercedes will probably be the ones that accept this technology first and be ahead until Toyota decides to bring that technology on board.
Well, we'll see about Ford, because I mean, remember, they're in bed with Microsoft.
True. Yeah. But Microsoft, the sync system is still, it's the same thing, though. They're leaving it up to the software manufacturer.
Yeah, no, they are. That's
the same principle.
They're just incorporating it. But that's the, you know, and we sat here, we were chatting to Arthur about it in terms of that you're going to sit there and you're only going to have, with all these amalgamations, you're only going to have an option of, let's say, three at most. You're going to have a Google, pretty much an Android system. You're going to have an Apple iOS, or you're going to sit there with a Microsoft-based system. Mm. And those are pretty much going to be the only three. And you're going to eventually going to be buying cars based on which one of those you prefer, not which motor manufacturer you prefer.
So much for choice, eh?
Yeah.
Do you prefer Android's operational sort of
so
interface?
Yeah.
You're going to start selecting from that variety of cars that use Android. And virtually each and every manufacturer out there is eventually going to, and George, I don't think this is very far away. I think we're four or five years from that.
Well, no, this technology has been around for, I mean, remember Michael Knight and his car kit? He spoke to this guy. I mean, hey, come on, guys. You forget quickly.
No. How can you forget that? Come on, that was kit.
He spoke to his car. The guy, you know what I mean?
If you're familiar with Siri on Apple and Siri's little blinking light at the bottom, looks very much like Michael Knight.
Yeah.
But interestingly, you point out Audi, BMW, and Mercedes clubbed together to buy Nokia's mapping division.
Sorry,
they paid $2.7 billion US dollars.
They must know something.
And clubbed together. Mm,
they must.
And
know.
You know, is that a bit of a hasty decision?
Or is that just
given Audi's already got CarPlay?
Yeah, Audi incorporates CarPlay in that. Now, George, remember, not every buy over is to, you know, for the betterment of the brand.
Yeah, it might, yeah.
Sometimes it's just to absorb it and
get rid of it
so that it's no longer a challenge.
But the mapping software of Nokia, that's what they bought it for. They bought it for the mapping technology.
OV Maps and all that sort of stuff that Nokia used back in the day was never much pot. Yes, it was a bit of a leader, but in terms of what Google's doing, you can't compare. Not even Apple is way behind when it comes to mapping and navigation.
Because truth be told, I mean, in all these beautiful software and whatever thing that you have in your cars, how much of it do you use?
You'd be surprised, hey?
Depends.
You'd be surprised. When you figure out how it can actually benefit you, when you sit and you take the time, you'll be very, very surprised at how much of it you do end up using, hey?
Like, I mean, let's talk the Club Sport, for instance. What else does it have?
It's got the navigation. It's got the navigation with it, and while that was actually good, I was a little disappointed because it wasn't accounting for traffic at the time.
Ah.
You see, and now that's where something that Google Maps would have accounted for traffic, and quite accurately, you know, with real-time updates constantly along the way. It just gave you basically three ideal routes. It gave you options and that. I sat there. I didn't go through too much of it. I mean, it's performance orientated, so it's not going to have the sort of bells and whistles that, let's say, a Mercedes-Benz C-Class of the same sort of price is going to have in it that's meant to be as a commuter. What other bells and whistles did we have? I mean, if you sit there and you take a look at some of the driving aids that are incorporated into cars in terms of adaptive cruise control. I was using cruise control and speed limiter on a regular basis. Places where I know they trap, set the speed limiter, don't worry about it.
So now that's interesting because in the future, will it be mandatory for your car, if we're again talking about machine-to-machine technology, will it be mandatory for your car to upload your speeds to law enforcement? Because that could be something that because now the police don't need cameras on the roads anymore.
Sure.
Yeah. You don't need speed traps.
Like a siren will go off to say a car X, Y, and Z's been driving at
and
that speed
take some money straight
of
off your bank when you get a fine.
It should come with a plug on off option.
No, people will throw their toys out of the cot because you know that is speeding can sometimes be, and it's not always, but can sometimes be besides therapeutic, justified.
In
an emergency.
Emergency situations, a brief overtaking situation or something of the sort. You know, it's not right when you're overtaking. You know, that's not actually a justifiable excuse. But sometimes there is. Very seldom, but sometimes there is. And, George, I think that there'd be a lot of
pushback
and laws that would have to be put in place as to what information is shared and especially passed on to third parties.
But you can see the complexities. I mean, the complexities are huge. But back to the data that Tyron was talking about, the underlying reason for me that these car companies are grappling with this M2M technology and Apple CarPlay and Android Auto is because of the screen. Everybody wants to own that screen. Why?
For advertising.
Advertising. They want to take a piece of that advertising out of that 100%. Out of that screen. And this is going to be an interesting thing that plays out over
because
the next couple of
earlier,
years.
Because you said earlier, if your car's driving itself, what are you going to be
doing?
You're either going to be looking at your phone or you're going to be playing on the infotainment system. That's
and you're going to be consuming
you're asking
it.
The question, what would I be doing? Is that what you're asking me?
No. I don't want to know.
What would Seppel be doing?
Yeah, exactly.
Because there's no more therapeutic speeding.
I've been reading my scripts, guys.
Gentlemen, it's been another fantastic hour with you. Thank you very much once again.
Sorry, before you go, Mfet, I've got to ask a stupid question. What does GTI stand? I could Google it, but it doesn't make for great radio. What does GTI stand for?
The origin of it, Grand Touring with injection.
But that's not Grand Touring. When you're flying in a GTI, there's nothing grand about it.
That's actually a bit of a letdown. I thought it would have been something far more exciting.
You know, because in the times, some boys call it go to Italy, get them inside, or gin tonic and ice. You know, some interesting
Hachun. Well, you know what? Let us know what do you think GTI should stand for? Send us your comments at AutoTraderSA, # AutoCentral. Gentlemen, until next week, Monday, thank you very much, and be safe on the roads. Have a good week. Ciao. Sure.
Auto Central, powered by Auto Trader on CliffCentral.com.
So T, do you know that we host Motoring's biggest power hour?
Yes, I do.
And do you know that it's not just a show about cars, but it's a show that covers a host of relevant motoring topics?
Yes, I do.
And do you know that there are over 1 billion cars currently in use on Earth and that the new car smell is composed of over 50 volatile organic compounds?
No.
Make sure you're up to speed with all things motoring by tuning in to Auto Central every Monday morning at 9 a.m. just after the Gareth Cliff Show, or download the podcast on autotrader.co.za. Auto Central, motoring's biggest power hour, powered by Auto Trader.
This is CliffCentral.com.